Well, I am Jessica Star Rockers, and I'm really grateful to be here today. So, I am in seminary. I'm in my first year of seminary. And this summer, I took a class for seminary, one of my first classes, that was taught by humanist theologian Dr. Anthony Pinn. And the title of his class was African American Non-Theistic Humanist Theology. Exactly. I was deeply affected by this course, so deeply affected that it has dominated my theological preoccupations ever since. In his book, The End of God Talk, Dr. Pinn writes that from the perspective of African American humanist theology, God is a symbol, a human construct. A human construct that no longer functions, that no longer carries the weight of the job it was meant to do. It is easy for me to accept this idea of God as a human creation, and one that says more about humanity than it does about the existence of a divine being, because of the fact that I am standing here today. 14 years ago, I quit drinking. When I got sober, I was told by my support group sponsor to pray to the God of my understanding to keep me clean. The trouble was that at that time, the God of my understanding didn't want me anymore, not as the person that I truly was. The God of my understanding, the one with which I was raised, said that there were parts of me and parts of what I believed that were unacceptable. So I didn't want to ask this God for help or forgiveness. In fact, if this was God, I didn't want to go to heaven anyway. So my sponsor told me to make it up. Just make it up. This is where God becomes a conscious invention. Because I went home and I wrote down everything I thought that the perfect God would be. And then I prayed to that God. And I chose to believe in that God. Even when it felt stupid, even when there was clear evidence to the contrary, even when I knew I was faking it. It is a familiar refrain in recovery circles to say, if it was up to me, I would be drunk right now. I've said it myself many times over the years as a way to prove God's existence. How else would this be possible? For an addict to be alive and free of the compulsion to drink except through some divine intervention. For many years, my existence was the proof for me of God's existence, my own salvation, proof that it is a benevolent universe. Somebody up there cares about me. I matter. I was saved. When I became a UU, by that point, I was convinced. Not only had I created my own God, but I believed in this higher power as something that cared enough about me to save me from the depths of hell on earth. Shortly after I started attending Cedars UU Church on Bainbridge, one of the ministers, Reverend Jaco Tenhove, gave a sermon in which he said, "As UUs, we don't believe what we want. We believe what we must." So that was it for me. Truth or fiction, it didn't matter. I believe what I must. So from this perspective, it wasn't purely invention. I was called to believe in this God. I was compelled to believe in order to survive. The good news is that for many years, I was able to maintain the tension of a belief in a God that I knew I made up myself. But I find it difficult now to explain a God that saves me and yet chooses not to save so many others who struggle with the same demons. Is this God my God alone? My own personal liberator? Or does this God simply think that I am more worthy of saving? In his book, Dr. Pinn says, liberation theologians have made a faulty assumption that God is good, that he is on the side of the oppressed. But based on the evidence, God is not about the business of liberation. I don't even need to name any examples of how this might be true. I'm sure you can all think of several. In my own life, I have prayed for the liberation of my fellow alcoholics, but it hasn't had any discernible effect. God has not saved any of those people, including several friends who died from drug overdoses, family members who passed away from alcohol-related illnesses, and people I dearly love right now who are drinking themselves to death. The God I created thinks I matter, but apparently not very many others. So my God, my admittedly conscious human creation, can no longer carry the weight of the job that it needs to do, because I'm no longer concerned with just my salvation. My UU faith actually calls me to something more. And the funny thing is, this God that I created that saved me hasn't actually made it easy. It is a struggle. It is perpetual rebellion, and there is certain failure. I will always have the disease of addiction. This will never change. So why keep fighting? Why attend to myself in this way? Why stay awake when it is at times painful? This is the challenge of humanism. How do we engage with the world when there is no ultimate salvation, when there is no great reward, no guarantee of success? And in fact, when current events suggest that, contrary to the uplifting words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the arc of history only bends toward justice if we work really hard and stay almost impossibly vigilant. Dr. Pinn says that the struggle goes on indefinitely, and our personal sense of wholeness and fullness is not the end goal. Our personal sense of wholeness and fullness is not the end goal, but rather a way to forge an identity better capable of wrestling with the truth. If we believe that God is a human construct that no longer functions, and African-American humanism says, let's replace it with something that does, then we are called to go back to the drawing board. Personally, I am stuck in a body that fails to function normally, fails to be acceptable. And so I've learned to live with the dissonance of this, the discomfort. I'm not interested in looking heavenward and taking my eyes off the messy world. The result of me getting sober was that I discovered I actually kind of like it here in this mess. And I have found that being of service to others, being in community, has been more useful to my sobriety than any prayer I have ever said. In community, we support one another in what Dr. Pinn calls our quest for complex subjectivity. And the ability to engage in this quest is freedom. That's what we are fighting for. The right to strive for unachievable wholeness. And God or no God, this is a human right. It is embodied living. For me, then, it is more than just staying sober. The quest is the calling. And in this quest, there is no room for a God that would arbitrarily choose to save me and not somebody else. As long as I am alive, my quest for complex subjectivity, for symmetry and wholeness and beauty, will not end. All of us, all of our quests, as uncomfortable and unsatisfying and imperfect as they are, they will go on. We all feel called to be sitting here in this community of many faiths, where we work together for the greater good. And so I think, as Unitarian Universalists, a belief in God is beside the point. What we are working for is humanity, that we are stuck here together, come what may, And like Aesop's bundle of sticks, we are stronger together than we are apart. Perhaps there is a God out there who will like you better than your neighbor, who will save you. But if our faith calls us to care about what happens to our neighbor, then of what use is that God anyway? There is a book called Quicksand by Nella Larsen. It is the story of Helga Crane, a woman of mixed ethnicity, both black and white, who, because of her struggle with identity, is cursed with perpetual dissatisfaction. I read this book for Dr. Pinn's class, and at first found her story profoundly depressing. I don't want to spoil the ending for you, but there is no resolution. And it reminded me of my own existential struggles, and I couldn't get past the tragedy of it. But upon reflection, I see her a bit differently. There is triumph in the struggle. Helga Crane tries everything to come to terms with her identity. She exhausts every resource at her disposal in her quest for wholeness, never comes to resolution. All she has in the end is the strength to go on, despite what appears as certain failure. This is the potent beauty of humanism. It is an unconditional commitment to humanity, a refusal to surrender, and an acceptance that as we work here on earth for the liberation of all, we will fail. But we will try again, fail better. In a world where God is seemingly not about the business of liberation, we can be humbled by the fact that the good which comes from our actions is not necessarily our business. We are only called to fail better. We are only called to refuse to surrender our humanity, to refuse to deny the humanity of others, to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves, to minister to those who need to be reminded of this, and to fight for everyone's right to engage in the quest to make meaning out of their own lives, and that each one of us gets to define for ourselves what that is. In order to do this, we must stay awake to the truth, however difficult it may be. And I would like to take a moment to mourn the God that no longer serves me and my beliefs. But thankfully, humanism says that my God is not dead. All along, it was a symbol that just needs a little updating. And I have to say, as you use, I think this is a fantastic exercise. If we are growing and changing, and our subjectivity becomes increasingly complex, then so too should our symbols. So too should our metaphors. In her book, The Sacred Depths of Nature, Ursula Goodenough, a well-known religious naturalist, writes about how she gets such a feeling of transcendence at comprehending the science behind evolution that it is not unlike a spiritual experience. She writes, "We have throughout the ages sought connection with higher powers in the sky or beneath the earth or with ancestors living in some other realm. We have also sought and found religious fellowship with one another. And now we realize that we are all connected as creatures, not just in food chains or ecological equilibria. We share a common ancestor. We share genes for receptors and cell cycles and signal transduction cascades. We share evolutionary constraints and possibilities. We are connected all the way down. Blessed be the tie that binds. It anchors us. We are embedded in the great evolutionary story of planet Earth, the spare, elegant process of mutation and selection and bricolage. And this means that we are anything but alone." In this passage, reason itself has shifted in meaning. Rather than figure out the workings of nature in order to direct its processes to productive ends, we use our reason to contemplate what Iris Young calls the eternity of the heavens and the subtlety of the soul. When we allow reason to become religious, then our humanism is truly spiritual. We become present to the feeling of transcendence we might experience while watching the sunrise. We let go of the God that doesn't serve us and still say prayers as a way to set our intentions for the day. We can practice ritual and know it is meaningful if only because we are in community together. We can worship, an old English word which simply means to create something of worth. Every day, we worship at the altar of being alive. Every day, we seek to make meaning from our experience, knowing, if not fully accepting, that in the end, all we had was the meaning that we made, and in some cases, made up. And this act of creating meaning doesn't make it any less worthy. On the contrary, it is even more valuable. There is a well-known image by Goya from the 18th century called "The Sleep of Reason Produces Monsters." The full epigraph reads, "Fantasy abandoned by reason produces impossible monsters." United with her, she is the mother of the arts and the origin of their marvels. So let us dream without abandoning reason. Let us love and be inspired by myths and stories and music, and know that while these offer us a feeling of transcendence, they don't always offer the truth. The truth calls us to act. But the myths and the music inspire us to go on struggling, to go on making meaning together, when possibly we are the ones just making it up as we go. As theologian Barbara Brown Taylor says, "What is saving my life now is the conviction that there is no spiritual treasure to be found apart from the bodily experiences of human life on earth. My life depends on engaging the most ordinary physical activities with the most exquisite attention I can give them. My life depends on ignoring all touted distinctions between the secular and the sacred, the physical and the spiritual, the body and the soul. What is saving my life now is becoming more fully human, trusting that there is no way to God apart from real life in the real world."